Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Tuesday, February 10th. I'm Olivia Rose. Petersburg's 9th annual Project Connect Resource Fair happened late last month, and organizers say more people identified they're experiencing homelessness in Petersburg compared to previous years. The one-day event aims to serve anyone experiencing housing insecurity by providing access to resources. People could take home free clothing, camping gear, hygiene items, and a hot meal. Several local organizations were there to help as well, offering assistance with things from vouchers to flu shots. Attendees also took a survey about their housing situation. The results are shared with the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development as part of a nationwide point-in-time count. Local nonprofit Humanity in Progress, or HIP, put together the event in Petersburg. Ashley Kawashima is president of HIP. She told KFSK that the information collected over just a few hours helps give a snapshot of what's going on in the community and highlights the present need.
With the survey, you know, what we're asking specifically is where did you sleep the night before? And kind of just getting, you know, some feedback from them also on like what their needs are and things.
It was a total of 165 people attended this year.
Yep. So we had 165 participants. At first glance, though, we had about 50 people who did the actual survey. Over half of them identified that they were either currently experiencing homelessness and staying in a place not meant for habitation or couch surfing, or in the last 3 years, they had experienced at least one event of homelessness. There was about 21 to 23 people, I believe, of those 50 that identified that the previous night they had stayed in a place not meant for habitation or were couch surfing.
Okay. So over 20 folks mm-hmm. in Petersburg are currently experiencing homelessness.
Yeah, and that's just a snapshot of people we were able to get one day in 1 4-hour period. And that does not, you know, give the full picture. There were definitely participants that, you know, weren't able to make it that we know are experiencing homelessness currently. So we do know that number is higher.
What do we do with this headcount of people in Petersburg? Do we send the information somewhere?
Yeah, so we input the data into the HUD database, which is shared state and federally. It's used for a lot of different things. I think the main focus of what we try and use it for is just educational purposes also, to help educate the community that there is housing insecurity and homelessness occurring in our community. And that the reason that we're trying to expand resources and how to increase housing options and things like that is because, you know, there are people facing this problem. And, you know, it's just really tough for us to, you know, only have a tent to offer people. You know, at HIP, we don't have emergency sheltering options and things like that to tell to people. So a lot of times we're just giving them a tent and a tarp. And so, you know, by collecting this data, we're hoping to just continue kind of moving forward with what we need to do to get everyone housed.
What kind of takeaway does this give the Petersburg community? Like, why do you think this is important for Petersburg to do every year?
Well, so for example, this year's numbers of people sleeping in places not meant for habitation is quite a bit higher than what we've surveyed in the past. And I think that there is a large population of people that are willing to have conversations about the cost of living going up and how that's tough on people and what that can look like. You know, the challenges of having to choose to pay rent or buy food for your family, things like that. But then I think by looking at these hard numbers of like people that are actually sleeping outside, people that are actually, you know, actively seeking housing options and not able to find them. Some of these people have Section 8 vouchers, for example, but haven't been able to find a place that qualifies for that because of the limited low-income options and things like that. And so I'm just hoping that that information and data can help continue moving those conversations forward in a productive way.
Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of data gathering, of course, and also connecting people with resources.
Yeah, so the survey is obviously really important, but the main reason that we do this event is to get people connected with resources, not just, you know, clothing and hygiene and cleaning supplies, but also with other community organizations. It's a big event, and it requires a lot of moving parts and a lot of volunteers. And so having all those partnerships and having all of our participants see how many people in the community really do care about finding productive solutions and providing resources is really great. But I think again, with this data and having these conversations, like, our goal is that the conversation doesn't stop here. And we obviously don't have all of the solutions and answers, but, you know, there's lots of people in the community who want to help and who have good ideas who we know we haven't heard from. And so we really, we would love to hear those voices too.
That was HIP President Ashley Kawashima talking to KFSK about the recent resource fair and point-in-time count held in Petersburg. More information about resources can be found with this story online at kfsk.org. After proposing to build a new cabin near Juneau's Herbert Glacier, the U.S. Forest Service released a draft decision last month abandoning it. The cabin site was initially selected due to public interest. It would have been built within a mining claim block across the river from the proposed New Amalga gold mine owned by Grand Portage Resources. The Forest Service approved exploratory drilling at New Amalga in April. But Paul Robbins, a public affairs officer for the Tongass National Forest, says the decision is unrelated to mining interests. He says it has to do with the challenging location and limited staff capacity. This comes after the agency lost a third of its staff in Alaska last year.
The proposed cabin site's elevation, distance from the trail, design requirements, and the need to move materials through difficult terrain all add to the complexity of that cabin project.
He says the agency's landscape architects and engineers could be overwhelmed with work if they moved forward with building the cabin. But some residents in Juneau submitted public comments saying they don't believe those reasons are genuine. And staff from the Alaska Miners Association and Grand Portage submitted comments to the agency before the draft decision, saying that building a cabin near the proposed mine could lead to disputes over how the land is used. Herbert Glacier Cabin would have been part of the Alaska Cabins Project, the Forest Service's biggest public use cabin expansion plan in 50 years. The project proposed to bring around 25 new cabins to the Chugach Tongass National Forest, including 5 in Juneau. Robbins says canceling this one won't affect the other proposed cabins, and he says the Forest Service plans to move forward with rerouting part of Herbert Glacier Trail and building a scenic overlook there instead. Robbins says that even though there is a lot of public support for building Herbert Glacier Cabin, the agency is unlikely to change course.
Only because our decision was based on the complexity and capacity, not on whether or not the site was popular. We know the site is popular. That's why we wanted to initially build a cabin there.
A public comment period to object to the cancellation closes on March 9th, 2026. Scientists have confirmed that destructive landslides are happening more frequently across Alaska, especially in Southeast, using news articles dating back more than a century. As KTOO's Alex Solomon reports, it's because climate change is making atmospheric rivers more extreme.
Aaron Jacobs is a hydrologist at the National Weather Service in Juneau. He and his colleague set out to answer a major question prompted by at least a dozen fatalities in Southeast over the last decade.
I get this question a lot from people out and about, and just even emergency managers, of, are we seeing more landslides across Southeast Alaska?
Specifically, deadly and destructive ones. A couple of years ago, scientists weren't sure. Now, Jacobs says the answer is yes. According to the study published in the journal Landslides in November, news outlets reported 281 destructive landslides between 1883 and 2025 in Alaska. They found the number of reported landslides started to increase in the 1980s and has skyrocketed in recent decades.
A big thing that stuck out was the precipitation-driven or triggering events that were increasing within this last 20 years.
4 fatal landslides hit Southeast in recent years. Sitka in 2015, Haines in 2020, Wrangell in 2023, and Ketchikan in 2024. And they were all triggered by heavy rain or rapid snowmelt. In the paper, the scientists drew a connection between rising temperatures and an increase in precipitation across Alaska over the past half century.
It's all connected.
It's climate change. As the globe heats up, more intense atmospheric rivers are slamming Southeast because warmer air can hold more moisture. These downpours can cause steep slopes to crumble. And there's another thing that increases landslide risk. When storms dump rain on top of snow, that melts it down into the soil and rapidly saturates slopes. A just published study found that this phenomenon triggered the large 2023 Wrangell landslide. Both atmospheric rivers and rain on snow events are expected to become more frequent and intense due to climate change. How people use the land also plays a role in where landslides occur and how they affect people. On Prince of Wales Island, scientists have mapped nearly 800 landslides. The island is crisscrossed by hundreds of miles of logging roads.
The writing is on the mountain.
That's Quinn Abudera, the natural resources manager for Shaunseat, the tribal corporation in Craig. He says he's noticed that landslides are more prevalent in logged patches and where roads cut across steep slopes. When he was growing up in Port St. Nicholas Bay, he says landslides weren't as frequent, and more snow fell in the winter. In recent years, it mostly rains.
And now we treat the rainy seasons as landslide season.
He says Shaunseat is piecing together a road and culvert inventory to identify problematic areas. During a deluge, he says culverts meant to funnel water under roads can clog or just aren't big enough to handle the runoff. That causes water pressure to build up in the hillside and can lead to landslides.
And we're looking to replace those with actual bridge works instead of culverts.
At the Sitka Sound Science Center, Lucas Silva is working on other measures to reduce risk. He manages the Kuté Geohazards Project, which works with Southeast communities to address gaps in landslide science and public safety.
Because no one wants to lose their neighbor or their home or their friends or loved ones in a landslide. And we have steps that we can take to make that less of a possibility.
The center developed an early warning system for Sitka that Silva says other communities are using as a model. Many communities are working on or already have landslide hazard maps. But some municipalities have struggled to take action. After residents in Juneau pushed back against updated landslide hazard maps, the Juneau Assembly declined to adopt them and rolled back development restrictions in landslide paths. Nearly identical stories played out in Sitka and Haines. That's because homeowners don't want to see their property values tank and insurance premiums rise. Silva urges people to keep the bigger picture in sight.
We know what we know about how our landscape is going to change even further and how our landslides are going to be more and more impactful and frequent. What are we going to do about that? And what are we going to do to make people safer?
In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
A Sitka-based cruise line is closing its doors. Alaskan Dream Cruises announced last Wednesday that it has ceased operations and canceled all future sailings. In a post on its website, the cruise company said since 2011, it's had the, quote, privilege of sharing the wonders of Alaska and the richness of our Alaska Native heritage with incredible guests from across the globe, end quote. The company is owned by Allen Marine, a local maritime business in Sitka that's been offering wildlife and sightseeing tours in Southeast Alaska for about five decades. Here's company's spokesperson, Zach Kirkpatrick.
Really proud that we were homegrown and indigenous owned line right here in Sitka. And that grew into world-class cruises and winning national awards and appearing in worldwide publications, which was really something we're proud about.
Alaskan Dream Cruises operated four overnight cruise vessels that each held between 40 and 80 passengers. Cruises lasted between 5 and 8 nights and offered a comprehensive look at the Inside Passage with activities like hiking, kayaking, and paddleboarding. Kirkpatrick says the decision to get out of the overnight cruise business was intentional and necessary for the sustainability of the company.
I think that, when you just kind of boil it down, the company just planning to refocus 100% of our resources on what we consider our founding strengths and roots, which are the day tour excursions and the shipyard operations and marine services.
Kirkpatrick says in 2025, Alaskan Dream Cruises employed 95 seasonal workers and about 10 year-round workers. With a closure, he said Allen Marine won't be hiring for the overnight boats this cruise season. The company said it's directly communicating with all guests about reservations and processing refunds. For KFSK, I'm Olivia Rose.